You're listening to Irish Sports Talk. Hello, Notre Dame fans, and welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 341, doing our preview for North Carolina State versus Notre Dame. Notre Dame at North Carolina State. Hopefully, it'll happen. Weather is an issue, and we'll get to that. Maybe some of the possibilities with that as well. What we want to talk about today is who is North Carolina State? What do they do well? And then Brian Kelly addressed the question was asked about the running game. Why hasn't Notre Dame been as effective in the running game? Brian Kelly had a comment on that, and so did Deshaun Kaiser. Pro Football Focus, which you can head on over there, profootballfocus.com, for great fantasy insights, but they also grade out multiple college games. There are two players that they have rated out pretty highly in this matchup. One's on Notre Dame's team, and one plays for North Carolina State. And then we'll do our players to watch at each position group for Notre Dame. So, to get started with, who is North Carolina State? And I do think they kind of play with a chip on their shoulder. They've been kind of on the verge of being a decent team, a really good team the last few years. They're 3-1 right now with their one loss coming to East Carolina. And the East Carolina team, they're a good team. And they've been a solid team. They're not part of the Power 5, but they have been a solid team the last few years. So, coming into this game, North Carolina State, they average 40 points per game, which Brian Kelly thinks that's a pretty decent amount of points. He made that comment in his press conference that Notre Dame is averaging 40 points, almost 40 points per game.
39.8.
But the one difference between these two teams is Notre Dame has been giving up 33 points per game, and North Carolina State is giving up 21 points per game. Both teams, go ahead.
So they're scoring more and allowing less.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, their competition hasn't been as good as Notre Dame. They played Old Dominion, and they started the season with William and Mary. So they had two FCS schools on their schedule. Their loss came to East Carolina. Their last win came against Wake Forest, a 33-16 win over Wake Forest.
Which Wake Forest is much better this year. They were undefeated up to that point, which was one of the best, if not the best start in their school history. So Wake Forest is a pretty good team this year.
And putting up 33 points on Wake Forest is impressive.
Yeah.
They do have a good defense.
They do, just so you know, it's North Carolina State does average, their total yards is 505 yards per game. Notre Dame's at 495. So very close, only 10 points different, but it is more. They're averaging a lot of yards on offense.
They are. They're a little bit more balanced than Notre Dame. Notre Dame is primarily passing the ball, averaging nearly 330 yards per game and rushing for 167. And East Carolina is just under 300. They're at 297 passing yards per game and over 200 yards rushing per game. So they're more balanced than Notre Dame is, but they've been more effective running the ball. They both run the ball about 55% of the time. I believe the exact, 50. North Carolina rushes the ball 56% of the time. Notre Dame rushes 54% of the time. So they attempt to run about the same amount as far as percentage-wise goes, but North Carolina State has definitely been more effective as far as that goes. So this North Carolina State team, this is a great tackling team, something we've been trying to get, we've been wanting out of our defense. They do a great job up front pushing the offensive linemen and kind of having their will with the offensive linemen. And we saw this against Michigan State, where I thought Deshaun Kaiser looked uncomfortable. The pressure was getting to him. I think we're going to see more of that against North Carolina State. So
I agree. This is one of the best defensive lines they'll face all year.
And I'm guaranteeing there will be a late hit or a roughing the passer penalty
by
North Carolina State. Yeah,
that is one thing that they struggle in. They do have quite a few penalties. I'm not sure what the penalties are and what they are, but against Wake Forest, they had 13 penalties for 144 yards. Their best game was the week before; they had two for 24. But then Against East Carolina, they had 8 for 54, and they had 7 for 80 in the first game of the against William and Mary. So they do struggle with penalties. I'm not sure where all they come from, but they do get quite a few penalties. So, yeah, I hope you're right. I hope there will be some of those.
Hopefully it just doesn't get Kaiser out of sync. If there is a late hit, or not even if there's hits on him, hopefully he's able to stay calm, stay in the game. And I think this is where the coaching, the play calling is going to have to account for the amount of pressure that they're going to get on Kaiser. And he's going to have to be aware of not hanging in the pocket too long.
Yeah.
But this is the other thing. Our offensive line has been great in pass protection.
Yeah, that's true. In pass protection, they have been doing good. But the scary thing is the running game in this game. And even in the pass protection, this is a week where the tight ends have to step up and do some blocking. We still haven't seen much of Luatua this year, and that was one thing he did last year was help with the blocking. So if they're going to use him as a blocker, this would definitely be a good game to use him at.
That is true. All right. So what do they do well? Well, they pretty much lead the nation in their third down conversion rate. They convert. They're second in the country, only behind Ohio State. They convert 55% of their third downs. And if you take away, a lot of those games were, only one of those was against a Power 5 team, Wake Forest last week. And against Wake Forest, they converted half of them, which would still leave them at 13th in the country. So they're very good at their third down conversion. And on the flip side, their defense, they only allow 34% of conversions on defense. So third downs are going to be huge. Notre Dame didn't do great against Syracuse on third downs. They didn't do great converting third downs. They did do a good job of holding Syracuse. I believe it was around 33%. So they did do a good job there. A big reason for their success on offense is their quarterback. He's completing over 70% of his completions. And comparing that to Kaiser, Kaiser's at 62%. But Kaiser is averaging more yards per attempt. Kaiser's at 10.4 yards per attempt, and Ryan Finley is at 8.7 yards per attempt. So definitely a solid quarterback that Notre Dame is going to be facing.
One good stat, he has a lot of good stats, but he has no turnovers in the year. So I think he has 9 touchdowns and 0 interceptions. So what he does very well. I don't think he takes a lot of risks, which, you know, obviously the competition they've been playing does make a difference, but he's been making very good decisions, and it shows.
All right, we've talked about, or it's been talked about, the weather issues for this game. Hurricane Matthew is in the area, and the last time Notre Dame played down in that area, there was also some rain issues. So Brian Kelly was asked about this, and they gave a window. This is the latest that I know, Randall. Maybe there is an update. The last that I know is that Notre Dame had talked with the ACC, and Notre Dame would be willing to play as early as Saturday at noon, which is when it's scheduled, or as late as Sunday at noon.
Yeah, that's what they'd heard. They had a conference call, which would have been Tuesday afternoon, and that's where they have it right now. Originally, there was talk about maybe playing Friday night, but that doesn't sound like it's on the table as an option. So it'll happen somewhere between Saturday noon and Sunday noon. So the downside with this is that it's almost a guarantee that it will be raining. I think there's a chance of up to 5 inches on Saturday, and they play on actual grass. Notre Dame is no longer used to playing on grass, so this, you know, it will probably be an issue. See players slipping and sliding, just like we've seen what happens in the past at Notre Dame.
I wonder if they do anything at practice. They obviously have their indoor facility, but the outdoor facility, do they have a grass outdoor facility? Do you know, Randall?
I don't think they do anymore.
Okay. But they definitely do practice weather conditions. Brian Kelly said the rain isn't an issue as far as passing the ball. Obviously, if it's muddy, slipping will be an issue. And I definitely have memories of that happening at Notre Dame when it wasn't raining. But the issue to him is the wind more than anything. And DeShone Kizer kind of said the same thing that, I mean, if it's raining, he can still get a good grip on the ball. He can adjust a little bit and still make throws and get it out there. But the wind could be an issue. And in that Clemson game, when most of the points were scored when the wind was with the team, there was maybe a field goal. There was at least a field goal, maybe a touchdown scored in the other direction. But the majority of the points were scored with the wind. So that definitely could affect the game. And it not even affect in the sense that Kizer won't be as accurate passing the ball, but because of that, it'll affect the play calling as well, where they won't be. They'll be more conservative. Notre Dame will be more conservative running the ball if it is windy, if wind is an option, a problem.
Yeah, they did, you know, Brian Kelly mentioned that against Clemson last year when it was raining, they basically threw the ball on every play in the fourth quarter. So that didn't cut, but, you know, it did cause issues. We saw some drops. We saw some that they should have caught. They probably would have if it wouldn't have been raining.
And some fumbles, too.
Yeah.
So
that is definitely going to be an issue, which it'll be, the fact of the matter, it'll be an issue for both teams.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I hate watching those sloppy games. I hate rain games because it's, you know, these teams can play better. So as far as the passing game, the one advantage Notre Dame will have, North Carolina State's starting strong safety, Sean Boone, is out for the game. So they're either going to have a redshirt freshman or redshirt sophomore starting at the strong safety position. So any help Notre Dame can get in the passing game is definitely going to help Notre Dame. They need it.
I agree. Let's continue. Let's talk about the running game. Brian Kelly was asked why they haven't been as productive running the football, and he kind of sidestepped the question and made it sound a little bit, yeah, there's some fundamental issues where I think maybe the players aren't playing fundamentally sound every snap of the game, where they're not able to, either allowing defenders to get past them or push them around. But he also, I mean, he said it's give and take. I mean, he kind of went back to, we're scoring 40 points per game, almost 500 yards of offense. It's not a problem, but it is a problem when you're at the goal line. And he was asked this when he was at the goal line and they ran it outside twice and they weren't able to get into the end zone against Syracuse. And I think this will be continued to be a problem. I don't expect it to get fixed, especially not against North Carolina State. This is going to be a tough team to run on.
Yeah. I think a lot of the media guys kind of had an agenda. They know what they want with the team. I mean, as far as they want a running attack, that's what they want. But Brian Kelly's going to take what he can get. And it's been hard for him to go to the running game in the past year. We've been begging for him to go to the running game in past years. And so this is his chance to go back to passing. And he likes to throw the ball. And if it's working, that's probably what he's going to do.
Well, and they're scoring points.
That's... You can't go against that. You're averaging almost 500 yards a game, and like you said, 40 points. I mean, you got to take that. You can't be too picky.
And even though the yardage is a huge difference, but as far as play calling, it's still 50-50 as far as running and passing. So they are balanced in that sense. They just haven't been able to break off some long plays. Yeah.
And here's another stat I'll throw in the long plays. North Carolina State has only allowed one play of 50-plus yards this year.
And Notre Dame had five against Syracuse?
Four. Well, they had four touchdowns that were 50-plus.
Okay.
Against Syracuse.
I think, on offense.
Yeah. So they'll need to be content with the shorter passes and shorter plays, just moving the ball down the field.
Well, I think it's going to be tough to have enough time to chuck the ball deep because they're going to be getting after Kizer.
Yeah, I agree.
And he's going to have to be watching for that check down. Okay. Pro Football Focus had a few players on their list of guys who are performing pretty well. On Notre Dame side of the ball, offensive guard Quentin Nelson had kind of a slow start, but the last three games played outstanding. He ranks fifth in the nation in pass blocking with a grade of 86.9%, and that's second against Power 5 teams. So he's really done a great job, and this is specific to pass protection, this grade. And then North Carolina State, their cornerback, Jack Tocho, graded out 89.1%. In the last game, he allowed three catches on 10 targets. He had one sack, one quarterback hurry, one quarterback hit. And on those three targets, or on those 10 targets, three were completed for 39 yards. So that's just one of the talented guys they have back there. And this is a very talented, fast, extremely well-tackling football team.
Yeah.
I was watching the East Carolina State game, and when we talk about tackling and not letting the runner get extra yards, that is what they do. When they tackle, and the guy stops.
Yeah, that's... Maybe they can take some lessons, see how they're doing it while they're playing. Have the defense line up on the sideline and say, watch what they're doing.
One interesting thing of note, there is a son of a famous former football player that plays for North Carolina State. There, maybe there's more than one, but this is the most famous one. Randy Moss has a son called Thaddeus Moss, and he's a tight end. He is a freshman. He has five catches for 46 yards and one touchdown. He's not their primary tight end, but he has had a catch in each of the games, their first four games so far. So I'm sure that will probably be a note. I'm sure we'll hear it on the telecast at some point.
Oh, I'm sure that'll come up at some point.
All right, let's go on then. From Brian Kelly's press conference, or was there anything else before we get to Brian Kelly's press conference, Randall? And then we'll do going through the Notre Dame position groups, picking out a player to watch for this this game.
No, I think I got most of that.
Brian Kelly was asked about how will the team improve from, or defensively, you know, how is are they going to improve? And he said that there definitely is a carryover from week one to week two. They'll be able to add to the game plan. And there are some changes in the two deep on the depth chart for sure. Fertitta is backing up Studstill at free safety, and then Jalen Elliott is backing up Tranquil at strong safety. And he just made a point, and I give Brian Kelly a lot of credit. He has not thrown Van Gorder under the bus. But
yeah,
I do want to play a clip from the press conference. It's towards the end of his press conference where I'm not completely sure what he was saying, and we'll get to that then. The first thing I noticed from the press conference was that Brian Kelly has an Apple Watch.
And you haven't noticed that before?
I haven't noticed it.
He wears it all the time. So.
We talked about the weather.
It's so they can check his heart rate during the game.
I guess so.
They can keep him in check. If his blood pressure goes above a certain point.
Jack Swart probably has a buzzer. If he starts getting too hot on the sideline, he'll zap him.
Yeah.
Other changes on the depth chart. Cole Luke will be the starting nickel cornerback. And then Julian Love will be starter opposite him when Cole Luke's in the game. And Dante Vaughn will come in as the other starter when Cole Luke is at nickel, which they'll probably be at nickel quite a bit this game. And as far as the defensive line, Brian Kelly was asked as far as four-man versus three-man. They played a lot of three-man against Syracuse. And Brian Kelly said that the three-man front gives them more ability to get more players into the game. But he also said that he likes it. He likes a three-man front.
They did it for how many years when Diaco was here? So it is something they were used to. And I think it works with some of the players they have, since they don't have those fast defensive ends. You know, get the three bigger guys in there and take advantage of that. And you can almost get more speed on the field because you can add that linebacker or another defensive back to get more speed out there.
And Anderson Betty is still listed ahead of the Hayes, Dalen, and Jay. And I find that I'm disappointed.
It's just a depth chart. Brian Kelly doesn't put it out. I mean, they, you know, I'm sure they sit down with Michael Burch and at some point tell him this is what they're going to do, but that could all change. When it comes down to game, they're not going to say, oh, we got to do this because this is what the depth chart said.
Okay, because I find it hard to believe that he's going to play more snaps than either Jay Hayes or Dalen Hayes.
I don't think he will.
All right. One note on Dalen Hayes. He was kind of asked, you know, where does he see Dalen in the future? And right now he's at about 245 pounds, but he thinks next year, after being in the weight room, he could be up to 260 and eventually be up to 270.
Which he wasn't in the weight room at all this fall because of his shoulder, so he is, you know, didn't have the weight gain that he should have had. But Julian Okoro was the other player that he kind of has as a hybrid player that he mentioned, so.
All right. I guess let's talk about the different... Let me play that audio clip. All right, so he was just asked a question. He wasn't really asked a question. One of the reporters said that it's good to see the coach congratulating players on the sideline. It's good to see the players congratulating each other. And then Brian Kelly, and this is about a minute and a half long, so I know it's kind of long, but just bear with us. The key is at the end when he starts to kind of wrap it up about what the issues were. And he just kind of ends it, and we'll talk about it after this.
Well, we'll see how that goes. I mean, you know, it was good last week. We got another really good team we're playing this week, and
it was like I said, he was asked about the team emotion or attitude, or as far as being positive and congratulating each other and being energetic on the sideline and ending the game.
We just have to understand, you know, that it's hard to win. Just look along college football. Offenses are allowed to do a lot. It's cheating on offense right now. I mean, we're playing with a lot of young, inexperienced players, and, you know, we're averaging 40 points and 500 yards. I mean, it's crazy. And it's hard. There are so many things that put you in conflict on defense. You know, as I've gotten to spend more time on defense, it's hard. And so you got to have something else going for you, and that is you got to have trust, you got to have a belief, you got to enjoy playing, you got to have energy. And if you don't have those special ingredients playing on defense, you're in trouble. You're in big trouble. And if you look around college football right now, there's some great programs giving up a lot of points, and there's some, you know, really good players on those defenses. So it's more than just scheme. It's more than just how many stars you got next to them. You got to have other things going for you. And we're not going to lose that again.
So he didn't answer the question, but he said he's not going to let that happen again. What is he talking about? He just got done saying it's not scheme. It's not stars by your name. I think what he's getting at is just attitude, but I think there was more than just attitude was the problem. I think it stemmed from players not being able to play what they were asked to play.
Yeah, I think he kept mentioning about putting players in the right position, and I think they just weren't doing what, yeah.
All right, let's go through each of the different position groups at Notre Dame, players to watch for. Let's start on the defensive side of the ball. Start at the back end. Start at the safeties. I'm going to pick Devin Studstill. He, you know, didn't play the whole game. Just played the first half pretty much. But just curious how he's going to. I'm expecting the defense as a whole to take a step forward, which is why I'm optimistic about this game. Even though Notre Dame, we didn't mention this, Notre Dame is an underdog, a 3-point underdog. So they're not favoring this game, but I expect the defense as a whole to take a step forward, and I'm curious if Devin Studstill is going to be able to also take a step forward, play well, even though he only played at half of football.
Yeah, I'd have to go with Studstill as well, just see how he... hopefully he's still tackling good after that. Hopefully he's not a little gun shy now that he got called for targeting, got That's kicked true. Out of the game. So hopefully he'll come in, chip on his shoulder, and make some big plays.
And then at cornerback, Dante Vaughn. They're probably gonna, Notre Dame's probably going to be in nickel quite a bit. And Dante Vaughn has been a – I think he's got a super high ceiling. Julian Love's done a great job being consistent, tackling very well. And obviously Cole Luke's going to be playing some nickel, so there's a lot of things to kind of watch there. But Dante Vaughn, just seeing if he can continue to step up. I mean, he's going to make mistakes, but can he be a solid tackler? Can he, when the ball's thrown his way, is he going to be looking for the ball? So Dante Vaughn is the guy I'm going to be watching for.
Well, I don't know if I want to be watching for him, but I'll definitely be watching Cole Luke just to see if he's made any improvements in the tackling. See if, you know, he's going to get his chance to make some tackles against this power run, you know, try to stop this running back, and just see if he improved at all, if he can get some of his confidence back.
And then at linebacker, go ahead. I'll let you go first on this one.
Man, it's hard to decide. I'm going with Anawalu. We didn't hear as much of him the last 2 weeks, and I want to see him making plays as much as they did in the first couple games of the year. He's been a little quiet the last 2 weeks. So.
All right, I'll take Niles Morgan. He's been leading the team. I believe he's the team leader in tackles.
Yeah.
Been very consistent, hasn't fallen into kind of that habit, or hasn't become victim to missing a lot of tackles. So just seeing if he can continue to be consistent and continue to stop players before they cross the line of scrimmage. And then at defensive line, go ahead.
I'm going with Dalen Hayes. I want him to be able to step up and maybe take the place. Well, I don't want Jay Hayes out the field, but maybe pass Trombetti on the depth chart. He needs to be out in the field. He makes things happen. And I'm not going to say he's going to get a sack, but I want to see him out in the field quite a bit.
And I'll take Jerron Jones. Consistency has been a problem, just seeing when he is out there. Is he making plays? And he has made some plays this year. He's had a handful of big plays. Interception, two blocked kicks. So even though he's not... He's criticized for not really putting a lot of effort into it, but he has had some big plays.
If he would just... I don't know if he would say even it out. He either has a monster play or a terrible play. I mean, there's no in-between with him. It's just... stop and go, basically, or maybe forward and reverse. There's no stop. It's just forward or reverse. But on a note on him, Matt Freeman had an article where, and I'm totally blank which site it was, but they had three Notre Dame players going in the first round, and Jerron Jones was one of them at the end of the first round.
Well, I mean, you've said this too, Randall, and it's true. I mean, the NFL looks at potential.
Yeah.
And he's got potential.
Hey, as many kicks as he blocks, maybe they just want him to...
just a special teams player.
Yeah.
All right, moving on, quarterbacks. Okay, do you expect to see Malik Zaire come in here at all?
Yeah. No, there's just going to be one quarterback in this game.
Running back, I mean, I know who I'm going to pick. Dexter Williams, and I'm...
I'm going to go with Dexter Williams. I was surprised he didn't get more carries last week after we heard Brian Kelly rave about him the week before and how he's playing with energy and whatever, and that's what the team needs. And I think right now he is the hardest runner. He is the most determined. And I would put him out there just to motivate the other guys. Folston, I could almost see Folston play a little more. This is more his type of game. I mean, it's not going to be... they need the power running back. This defensive line, you're going to need the guys out there that run straight ahead. And so I think Dexter should be the number one. Definitely the guy I'll be watching.
And Brian Kelly did say in his press conference that he is the one making all personnel decisions as far as who plays. So, and we definitely saw a big difference on defense. And I think Dexter Williams, I would be surprised if it's, was it 20 for Josh Adams and 8 for Dexter Williams?
Yeah.
I'd be surprised if there's that much of a gap this week. I think
Folston will get carries this week too. He was obviously injured last week.
But I don't think it'll be as big of a gap between Josh Adams and Dexter Williams. I would still be shocked if Dexter Williams gets more carries than Josh Adams, that it would change that fast.
Yeah, that's not gonna
happen. But I do think it'll be a lot closer. All right, offensive line. Colin McGovern is back and healthy again. He'll be starting.
He still that was a high ankle sprain, and those are nagging injuries. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll have to see what he can do. I'd go with him just because I want to see how good he is with his injury. That is a nagging injury. Just see if he can, if it affects him at all.
And these guys are going to be, seriously tested. I guess
hopefully they will obviously know they're going against one of the best defensive lines, so hopefully that'll help motivate them this week.
I'm going to go with just the left side with our two future NFL players, McClinchy and Quentin Nelson, and just seeing that left side as a whole, because this will be a super, super good test for them. And then tight ends, Randall.
Man,
I think we've skipped this some weeks.
Hey, last week there was two tight ends that got a catch. So, I'm actually going to be watching, see if Luatua, I don't know if he'll get any playing time, but see if he gets out on the field to help block this good defensive line. Obviously he missed spring practice, but he did a good job last year blocking. So either he's regressed or I'm not sure what the deal is, but I would like to see him out there doing what he did last year.
For me, Jerm Smythe, I'm not expecting or looking for a big catch, but I'm looking for consistency in blocking, pass protection, and in run blocking. And then our wide receivers.
Man, I'm going to go with Torrey Hunter just because he hasn't been the number one receiver on this team. And he's got to step up and take some pressure off of EQ. And, he does, like last week, I was surprised how many catches he did have. It didn't seem like it was that many. But he's got to be more, he has to step up and do more than what he has been. He's the leader. He's a captain. He's got to, basically, he's the Chris Brown last year. Chris Brown stepped up in the Clemson game, and took some pressure off, made some big plays. They're going to need him against this North Carolina State. They're going to need him to step up.
I do love that pick, and for all the reasons you mentioned. I'm going to take – go ahead.
No, go. I'll say that.
I'm going to take EQ. He has had a really outstanding first five games, and there is going to be more of a focus on him. And so will he be able to handle that? They might double cover him sometimes. Is he still able to get open? Is he going to be able, when they're running the football, is he going to do a solid job of blocking downfield?
The question, off-season question was, who can we ever replace Will Fuller? So here's a stat for you. Will Fuller averaged 20.3 yards per catch last year.
Did he really? I'm surprised it's that high.
EQ is averaging 21.6.
Okay, but
I'm not saying he's replaced Fuller.
Everyone knew who Will Fuller was last year, and EQ, people didn't really know who he was the first few games.
But I totally agree.
But that is amazing.
We have an answer. We have somebody that is far exceeding what everybody expected.
It is true.
And we wondered who's going to make up for all the yards that Fuller had last year. Well, EQ is doing more than that.
And I was really skeptical of this wide receiver group coming in because I thought that they would take a huge step back in the passing game because there wasn't a Will Fuller on the team, and they really haven't. You're right. And probably a lot of that credit should go to Denbrock. He's their position coach, and we've had very excellent wide receiver play, even when we didn't have always have great talent.
And the one thing with him, I didn't look it up, but he has more receptions than what Will Fuller did in a game. Seemed like Will
you mean
Fuller.
Ever?
No. I'm just saying, like, per game, Will Fuller usually had like 3 catches for 150 yards.
Okay, yeah.
EQ is averaging more yards per carry, and he's basically averaging 5 catches per game. He's getting, lowest he's had was 4 and up to 6. So I think he's actually getting more receptions than what Will Fuller was in that game. Because Will Fuller made a huge impact with his long play. You knew when he got it, it was going to be a long play, but he only had a couple catches per game.
But then he wouldn't be able to average that many. I mean, he wouldn't be averaging. He's averaging fewer.
No, so EQ is doing a lot better because he has more receptions and is still averaging more yards. But he's more involved. What I'm saying is he's more involved throughout the entire game than what Will Fuller is. You'd kind of forget about Fuller, and then all of a sudden he'd have a huge gain.
Yeah, that is true. I'm
not saying that he's replaced Fuller.
I know.
Next year is going to be the test. The second year, like you said, nobody knew who EQ was. Everybody knew who Will Fuller was. Everybody tried to stop him.
And I do have a rundown kind of here of Will Fuller's numbers. And yeah, there were some games where he had, against Clemson, he had 2 catches for 37 yards. Against USC, he had 3 for 131 yards. So those were huge plays there. But there was, just glancing at it, probably 4 games where he had 3 catches. And then he had some where he had 6 and 7. Or about as many where he had 6 and 7. But yeah, you're right. There was definitely some games where he wasn't able to make a big impact. But I think it was because the defense, because there wasn't another wide receiver consistently that was able to really take advantage of that.
Yeah.
All right, I think we got everything. Quarterback, I think we got through all the position groups.
You going to pick anybody on special teams?
Oh, yeah. Let's not forget about them.
We'd like to sometimes, but...
I was going to go a little unconventional. Go ahead while I do you have one in mind?
Yeah, I'm going to be watching Yoon just because he needs to make all the kicks. We got used to it last year, and so it's a little disappointing to see him miss some of those what seem to be easy kicks or get them blocked. I want to see more consistency out of him. And this could be a game where they use him quite a bit. If it is raining, it's hard to move the ball. Here's a game that, you know, they need him to step up. And the scary thing is that's where the wind comes into play, too. So.
Yeah. North Carolina State hasn't been very dynamic returning kickoffs or punts. They've averaged under 19 yards per kickoff return. But they've done a great job of holding teams to under 19 yards per return as well. So initially, I was thinking we've been concerned with Notre Dame's coverage. So I was thinking about just picking the coverage unit, but this is an individual thing more or less. Even though I did pick the left side of the offensive line, but so because North Carolina State they're good, they're solid at kickoff, at defending at kickoff coverage. So CJ Sanders. He's had some great plays throughout his career, and I think we'll need it this Saturday. So CJ Sanders on special teams. All right. Randall, anything else before we wrap up the podcast?
The one thing that I thought was interesting in Brian Kelly's press conference was the talk about fifth-year players. And I honestly never really thought about it. There's been talk this week about that because you do look at teams like Stanford. They have, Brian Kelly thought they have 18 or 19 players, fifth-year players. He mentioned they played a team that had like 15. I'm not sure which team it was. I didn't really check into it yet. I want to dig into it a little more.
I thought he said it was Stanford.
No, that they already played this year.
Oh, this year. Okay.
But you would think Notre Dame, I just always thought that Notre Dame has plenty of those guys because, you know, Notre Dame, you just think that Notre Dame is hard. The academics are hard. You know, it takes time to get through class. But That isn't the case. Notre Dame tries to get guys to graduate halfway through their senior year, basically in 3.5 years. And so that does make a difference. I mean, can you imagine if Notre Dame had 18 fifth-year seniors coming back? Which,
they could come back. They could come back, too.
On one hand, I've argued against that. If they're a fifth-year player, they're likely not the best players on the team.
They're not NFL-caliber players.
Because they would have left for the NFL. But as academics at Notre Dame, they encourage them to graduate in under 4 years. And so there's less, you know, that's why guys don't want to stay around. And I guess guys that have the good guys that have the option of coming back fifth year, we saw it would have been Sheldon Day. We saw some of the guys do it. But it is like it's not like they have to finish their classes. They have to take up another, you know, business, or they have to do something else, because, you know, at Stanford, they're like, well, you know, I should maybe stay and finish my degree the fifth year. It's different at Notre Dame just because you already have your degree, so what's the point of sticking around for another year?
And Brian Kelly did say, on record, I'd love to have 20 red shirts.
Yeah, so he's not going to get that this year.
Well, I think you're right. If a guy redshirts, he's most likely not an NFL caliber player. Most likely, Sheldon Day was, and there's a few here and there that are, but the majority of the time, if they are redshirted because they're not ready to play as a freshman, I mean, it's not because Notre Dame is so overall so talented that an NFL caliber kid won't come in and at least see the field or play on special teams.
Well, I think in some cases, that can be. I think if they're fifth year, they're not as likely to be NFL players. The redshirt. See, what the ideal situation would be is to do like Alabama, who basically has all juniors and seniors on the team. Like, that's who's starting, and then when they leave, there's another junior or senior to take their place. So those guys are redshirted because there are so many good players in front of them. So, like this, you know. You have to start out playing guys young. You know, somewhere it's got to start with the young players, but you want to get to the point where you have upperclassmen as the starters.
That are also NFL caliber-ish players. Yeah.
And the reason they don't start their first year or two is because there is so much talent in front of them.
Yeah, agreed. That is ideal situation.
So I think it's more about the fifth-year guys, you know. But, you know, it, also with the fifth year, you know, if you haven't played the first 2 or 3 years because of all the talent in front of you, then you would, you know, you might play your fifth year because you only played 1 year and you need, you know.
You need that fifth year to prove you're an NFL player.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, guys. Are we finished?
Yeah.
Thanks, guys, for listening. Check back tomorrow for our opponents podcast and then on Friday for our score prediction podcast. So, thank you for listening, and until then, go Irish.
Go Irish.